Yes, so last week we talked about the problems of coping with the need to be mafasher between the theories which the Torah lays down and the realities of life as we see it. In other words, that after the Hema Bikshu Cheshbonos Rabim, which means that there is now a presence of Ra in the world, and that the Biru of the Toiv has to come mitoich the Hakoro of the Afisus of the Ra. Remember we talked about Homon min haToiro minayin min haEtz, that the need to be makir the Emes from the Sheker, the Ora from the Choshech, derives from the Bikshu Cheshbonos Rabim. So a need arises to be mefasher. Make a pshara. Torah says this, the reality is that. Where do I come into all this? What do I do about it? So the emes, that's a very, very pointed question. What do I do about it? And in a way, this is a question that's koilel all other questions. That's the most basic of all questions. All the shailas which we have with our lives derive from a need to come to terms with situations which you find difficult and challenging and depressing. So, what's Taka the answer? So the answer Kohelet gives in his next few psukim. And the technical term for the answer is really the middle of hachna'a, kni'a, the willingness or the ability to be machni'a oneself to the rotzen of Hashem. Our frustrations come from having one's own tachnit. If I have worked out my own tachnit, and somewhere along the line, I am frustrated in being able to bring it to fruition. I had planned to do this, and something gets in the way, and I can't do it. So then I get angry, I get frustrated, because I have an objective goal which I want to achieve. And then if something gets in the way and prevents me from achieving it, so then I'm in trouble. But what would be if I wouldn't have an objective goal altogether? But my goal is simply to do that which the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to do, or to function in those circumstances in which the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to function. So then, if I started out doing this, and then suddenly something comes in between, fine, so then that's what Hashem wants, so that's what I'll do. Batel Ritzoncho Mipnei Ritzoncho. There's an avoider which is called to be mevatel one's Ritzon before the Ritzon of Hashem. Now the beautiful pshat in the Gemara by Shimon Hamsuni, was it? Who was Dorosh Kol Essen Shebetoyro. That's what I'm going to say. He spent his life trying to be mevaya what the es is mabe, until he came to es Hashem Elokeich Hotira. So then he didn't know what to be mabe. What's the es supposed to be mabe? That you should be yore before what? In the same way that you're yore before Hashem. So he didn't know. He couldn't think of anything to be mabe. So he was Pirush. He says, well, my shitta must be wrong. It must be that the S does not come the rabbis. Because over here there's nothing to be mabe. So I must be wrong. So his Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, call Oysan Essen Shidarash to Matehealayan. What about all the other Essen which you dashen? You spent your whole life dashening Essen. So now if you're going to back down on that, so what's going to be with that? So he answered, "Kshem she kibalti shcha al ha-drisha, al ha-drisha, kacha kavel shcha al ha-drisha." That's okay, no sweat. When I learned them, I thought that the S comes to be mabe. So that's when I looked for ribuyim. If now I find that that's not the case, now I'd be poirish. So that's a nice story as it is. You know the Knet. Rabbi Akiva came along and said, it comes, the rabbis, Talmidei Chachamim. Es Hashem Elok Perchotira is the rabbis, Talmidei Chachamim. So why couldn't Shimon Ram Sunni think of that? That it comes to be Mabe Talmidei Chachamim. What was the problem? They said, Pshat. Rabbi Akiva was only able to say it after he saw Shimon Ram Sunni be Pirish. That if a Yid can be such an Erech person, that he can rip up his life's work, the man, the bikush of emes, right? That he can say, Shem shekipalt Yisrael ha-drisha, kacha kabel Yisrael ha-drisha, now I understand that you can be mabe Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham has it in himself to bring such an unbelievable sacrifice, and all for the sake of emes, where it's pretty easy, you know, he could have swept it under the carpet and said, well, this S is different, and the gematria is like this, and you can find etzer, the share teshuva lo nina lo, you can always find an etzer. But he didn't. So this ability to be pirish, that is a superhuman ability. That's why Rabbi Akiva said, "L'rav is tamid chachamim." But where does it derive from? Where does the ability to be poirish derive from? How did the Nesiv feel when he closed down his yeshiva? A little bit of a suffix, exactly the historical background, the various nuschos, I'm not sure which is historically emes. But the gist of the story is that great yeshiva in Volozhin, which you've heard from, so then there was a zero, the government came out with an edict that there had to be some adjustment to the syllabus, that they had to teach some secular topics also in the yeshiva. And so rather than do that and compromise what he saw as the appropriate way of running a yeshiva, so he closed it down. So the question is, how did he feel about it at the time? I don't know, I wasn't there, I can't say. But how would I feel, or how would one feel? That you have a moysad, and you've put all your life into it, and were moysad nefesh for it, and found your fulfillment as a person in it. And suddenly it turns out that you have to give it all up. How does a person feel at that moment? Where does he find within himself the courage to close it down? I think that's superhuman. I don't think anybody can do it. I just don't think it's possible. Nobody can, the Mor Yodov, with his hands, just tear apart his whole life. I really don't think there's any way that anybody can do it. It's impossible. I think it's impossible. I know I couldn't do it. So how is it possible? So the only way it's possible is if it's not your life. Then it's possible. Now it's if the Nitziv built up a Volozhin because he needed a yeshiva and he needed to feel good and he needed to have a mizrachvan and he needed to have the okay feeling that he's been maimed talmidim habe, whatever it is. Oh, the story, it's a real Musadika story, not just showing about the Nativ. I don't know about anybody, I'm sure maybe it never happened, but it sure could have happened to me. But the Rel tells a story that there was a Geiser Rosh Yeshiva. It's Musa to all of us. Big Rosh Yeshiva, and he came into his yeshiva at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he saw the Beis Hamedrash, it was full of Bochum learning with Hasmodim. So like he was so nisragish from that. He started crying from his rakshas. Wow. Isn't this some so wonderful, this young Bachman being Moshe Nefesh, he says, learning. So somebody tugged him at the sleeve, maybe his Dr. Mashgiach, whoever it was, he says, would you have cried the same way if you would have come into Yenim's yeshiva and seen the same thing? Right? You would have gone to the yeshiva down the road, the other guy's yeshiva's yeshiva, and you would have seen the guys learning that late at night. Would you also have been so nisragged? Or is the pshat is because it's your yeshiva that you feel so good about it? What was he saying? He was saying that it's easy to get involved, right? It's easy to mix up. It's very, very hard to sort of take a path when I'm serving Hashem and when I'm serving myself, or when I'm serving Hashem in a self-serving kind of way. Somebody who's not a very great Odom Gadol, that could have been true, that criticism. Were you crying because, boy, look what I have established over here? Or were you crying from his pilots that the Rebbeinu Shem has such wonderful avodim? And it's not enough gemina whether they're living in your yeshiva or they're sitting in a different yeshiva. That's a difficult question to answer. But let's say there would have been a Rosh Yeshiva who would have said, okay, you're quite right. Yeah? I'm crying because it's mine. This is my life's work. He would probably be unable to close it down if he were called upon to do so. He'd find a heter. There's an aid, so we'll do it like this, we'll do it like that. To go and just close the whole thing down, maybe he wouldn't have the koyach to do it. The way he would have the koyach to do it, I imagine, would be if he didn't see it as his own thing. That's really what the prosek is saying. Ani pi melech Shemoyah. I think Shemoyah over here is Shemoyah in the same word as Ve'oviv. Shomar es hadavar, I think we had today, right? I'm waiting to see what Hashem wants. In other words, all bets are off. I do what I have to do now, but I don't sell myself to the particular thing that I'm doing. I don't commit myself. It is not I. Ani pi melech Shemoyah. In whatever I do, in whatever I get involved, the jury is still out. I don't know yet whether this is what Hashem wants me to do. Right now, I believe this is what Hashem wants me to do. So I'll do it. Will there come something which is a counterindication? So then I'll drop it. Va'al divras shavuas elokim. I know that I am a mushba ba'aymed. See, really, if a person could sort of get himself to think that way, to really think that way, he'd lead a different life. We are mushba v'aymed me'asina. What does that mean? That we made ourselves avodim nitzim to the Rebbeinu Shlalom. We told the Rebbeinu Shlalom. We are going to be your avodim. Do with us what you want. Use me in whichever way you want me to use me. You want me to do this? I'll do this. What do they call those things? A gopher. That's a job nowadays in an office, a gopher. You know what a gopher is? You hire a kid, go for this, go for that, go for tea, right? That's the heftzah of the job. So what do you see? You hire such a kid. Yeah? So in the morning you send him, you go out and mail this letter to bring my suit to the cleaners, get me a cup of tea. Yeah, so he's going to have time. That does his own job. His job is not to have a job. His job is to be available for everything which the boss wants. We are mushboim v'aymed to the Rebbeinu Shlalom. Half the troubles in the world, I would say probably all the troubles in the world, derive from a torus in this. Machlaikas among Yidden. So many times you have machlaikas. You know, everybody has a certain shitta. This is the right way to serve Hashem. And if somebody does it a little differently, different nusach, a different hanhaga, a different set of minhagim, a different value system, so he's no good. So I have to fight him. I have to I have to have machlokes with him, I have to hate him. Like, where does that come from? It comes from the same kind of an idea. In other words, I don't serve Hashem. I serve myself. This is my idea of what is right. So if you hold differently, so you're getting into my tum, you're bothering me. You're stepping into my sphere. So I hate you for that, I don't like you. So I've got to pull you apart, I've got to say you're no good. And this is tough, and that's tough, and that's no good, and that's no good. What would be if my only rotzen would be the rotzen of Hashem? I wonder Hashem should have accomplished in his world what he wants to be accomplished. And I wouldn't be nagei, I wouldn't have nagias. It doesn't have to be my way. I could recognize this way, that way, another way. That's what's called hachnod. Hachnod to the rotzen of the Rebbeinu Shlalem. You know, really, that's the story of Eov. Mentioned this before, it bears repeating. The Sefer Eov, difficult Sefer to learn. But structurally, it runs like this. Structurally, it runs that you had the Rebbeinu Shlalom, Shoshana, sitting in the Beis and Shalmala, and Sotan coming to challenge the Rebbeinu Shlalom. Rebbeinu Shlalom says, look, Asamta, Lipro, La'avdi, Eov. See what a tzaddik Eov is? So, Sotan says, no, you have to test him. No, guy. I want him tested. I want to see whether he'll be oimed b'nisayon if he has tzaros. And so he had these terrible issues, and we all know the story in its rough outlines at least. You know that when he had these yisurim, the three friends came. His three friends, three very close friends. And they come and they try and help him cope with his yisurim. And each one tries to explain to him the reasons why he's suffering so much. And none of them are very matzliach. None of them are matzliach at all. They give long, long talks, very, very detailed expositions of what they believe to be the emes, and Eov rejects them all. And he's very, very rebellious. He's very, very unhappy. He says, I don't see why I should have to suffer so much. And they come and tell him, look, you must have done this avera, and you must have done that avera. And Eov said, no, I didn't. And I know that I didn't do these averas. And I don't think it's fair, and I don't think it's right. In other words, the suffering called forth a great deal of rebellion within Eov, and he refused to be assuaged by the ideas which the Chaverim told him, because he just knew that they were not so, they weren't emes. He had not done these averas. So about halfway through the Sefer, the Chaverim bow out. They have not succeeded in doing what they wanted to do. They haven't comforted him. They just made things worse by giving wrong answers. And Eov was getting more and more frustrated because he kept on hearing the wrong things and they weren't true. So after the three friends sort of bow out, so then a fourth person comes along, a very mysterious person. We don't know much about him. Elihu. And he comes along and he has a long speech where he says, look, these three friends, they didn't know the emes. I'm going to be the one now who's going to be megale the entire emes of what happened over here. And he also explains to Eov very, very detailedly what he feels to be the emes, and doesn't help Eov at all. In fact, it doesn't help us either. When we learn what he says, we don't really understand what he's getting at. Doesn't seem to be very to the point, and we can understand Eov very much for not being comforted. The Ramban learns pshat that there is no pshat, that Elihu has to be understood only in the framework of soid. He says, in pshat, Elihu didn't help Eov at all, but he was megala to him, the soid of Gilgal, Hanashamas, whatever that is, And that's what he meant. But be that as it may, in the framework of Pshat, Iyov remains uncomforted and therefore very, very angry and very frustrated. He doesn't see why the whole thing has to be that way. So after Elihu is finished, so then the Ribbono Shel Olam himself comes and talks to Iyov. And when you learn the Sefer, you figure that now we're going to get the real stuff. Because even if the friends sort of missed the mark, and Elihu doesn't really say very much, but if anybody knows the Emes, it ought to be the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. And the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't really say very much either. Not in such a way that you would know, or that Iyov should really feel comforted. It's beautiful Prokim over there, how the Ribbono Shel Olam describes the Teva, the mountains, the rivers, the Bryas HaOlam, the Gadlus of Hashem. But it doesn't get down to the nitty-gritty. It doesn't go over to Iyov and say, look, Iyov, you know what happened? What happened was that I was sitting in my Bezdin, and the Satan came along and he challenged me, and that's why I gave you these Yisurim, to see how you would make out. Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't say that. In fact, nobody ever says that throughout the Sefer. And so you expect that when the Ribbono Shel Olam is finished, you'd expect Iyov to be just as angry and just as frustrated as he was all along. And the Emes is not that way. And that is that after the Ribbono Shel Olam came along, Iyov is perfectly happy. And he has no more tainus on Hashem at all. What happened? Hashem didn't say a thing which would make him understand what had happened to him. So why was he so happy? So he himself says the answer. He says, L'shema oizen shematicho, v'ato einai ruaso, alken emas v'nichamti al ofer v'efer. He says, I'll tell you what my problems were till now, Iyov says. Till now my problems were that l'shema oizen shematicho. I had tried to apprehend you intellectually. I had heard about you with my ears. And I tried to understand. And I didn't understand. There was absolutely no logic to what was happening. And so I didn't understand. And when you try to understand, and you don't understand, so you just keep on getting more and more frustrated, angrier and angrier, because the whole thing doesn't make any sense. And what's more, Iyov was right, it didn't make any sense. Because he hadn't done any avodas. This was a challenge. But he says, V'ata einai ruaso, now that you have come to talk to me, so now I don't apprehend you anymore on an intellectual basis, but I've experienced you. I've experienced what it means to have a communication from Hashem. I just loved that. And I don't need any more answers. It's true that you haven't given me an answer. And you haven't explained a thing to me. But you have put me into a matzav where it's not any more important whether I have an answer or not. Because I just don't care anymore. Because the overwhelming experience of having experienced a closeness to Hashem makes it irrelevant. I know that whatever you do is for my good. And therefore, I have no more questions. I have no more problems. That is the beautiful thing about the Sefer. You know, you'd think that somewhere along the line, all right, so at the back, so then somebody should go and tell Iyov, look, what happened was this and this and this and this. But that's never done. And that's the gorgeous beauty of the Sefer, that it is never done. You see, if at some point it would have had a happy ending in the sense that Iyov would have found out what was happening in the Basin Shalmala, so then the implication of the Sefer would have been that you have to have an answer. And in the end, Iyov got his answer. And the entire tachlis of the Sefer is the precise opposite of that. The entire tachlis of the Sefer is to explain that a person can be perfectly happy without an answer. What he needs is only a correct relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The person can feel himself in the presence of Hashem. If he can feel that Hashem cares for him, so then nothing is too difficult, because he knows himself to be loved and cared for by Hashem. Therefore, whatever he does as an Eved Hashem, and he has no personal involvement in what he does. He has no personal involvement. He has no frustrations when he's frustrated. You wanted to do this, now it won't work. I tried my best. I'll continue to try my best. First I did it in this area, now I'll do it in that area. So we are mushba va'oimed v'al divra shvuas Elohim. That's where it's at. Chazal say that before a person is born, the Baruch Hashem takes his neshama and he mashbia him. Tihi tzadik v'al tihi rasha. Rav Hashem makes it very, very clear to us, and deep down inside us, we know that we are here for only one purpose. So that is the geder of kniya to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Very, 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 very hard. But in a nutshell, the entire avoda of a person. That's implied by being an Eved Hashem. To be an Eved Hashem means to avoid your own negias. It's terribly, terribly hard. So when I'm saying that, I'm saying it entirely in theory, something which I can tell you from my own experience. But imagine how a beautiful thing it would be to be able to divorce oneself of one's negias. To be completely and utterly in control of what one does. Talked about it to a group of people before Rosh Hashanah this year. We were discussing some of the difficulties of making the fundamental changes occasionally in one's life, which one has to do in order to revamp one's life and to put it in the right direction. It seems to me that the part of the difficulty, or much of the difficulty, perhaps all the difficulty, is that we don't have the courage to ask the right questions, because sometimes asking the right questions requires giving some unpleasant answers. And I'm just not willing to pose the kind of questions which may force me to give the kind of answers which would be mechayev me to make the basic changes in my life which I may be called upon to make. The reason for that is because I am not machniya myself. I'm doing what I want to do, and I have no intention of changing that. And even if there's a little voice somewhere in the back of my mind which says, well, maybe you're going in the wrong direction. Maybe by doing what you're doing, you're going entirely in the wrong path, and you're going to end up misliving your life. So consciously or subconsciously, I answer, well, I understand, but too bad. I don't intend to change. That is where the problem comes in. Don't believe, the Pasuk says, that you can run away from Hashem. There's no way where you can escape your destiny. Don't get yourself all head up to try and escape Hashem. You only tried, you couldn't. The Baruch Hashem runs his world. We have to recognize that. Al ta'amod b'dovar ro. Don't. First half of the pasuk was running away. Second half of the pasuk is making a stand. Don't defy Hashem. Ki kol asher yachpatz yaseh. Recognize yourself to be in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. You have bechira. Sure, you have bechira. It means you can be baruch b'tov and you can be baruch b'ra, but you can't escape the need to make the bechira. You can't escape the destiny which the Ribbono Shel Olam puts in front of you. You have to come face to face with the Ribbono Shel Olam's challenges to you. There's no escaping them. Vashet v'melech shiltein. The Ribbono Shel Olam is in charge. U'miyom elo matase. Nobody can say to Hashem, why do you do this, why do you do that? For the simple reason that we have no havana in the hashgacha of Hashem. We don't know, we can't know why Hashem does certain things. All we know, what we can know is that it's not the end which is my concern. I don't have to farich the Ribbono Shel Olam. I don't have to bring this or that about. I have to do that which at the moment is my chiyuv. This hakara, that the end is not my geshäft. That my geshäft is only my reaction to the challenge, but not the end which is to be brought about, is a very, very important lesson to learn. And I believe that it's perhaps one of the hardest, because such a very, very, very thin line to draw. We tend, when we get involved in something, when we want to do something very, very badly, we tend to confuse our role. The simplest moshul we can think about, for example, if we get involved, let's say, in trying to be mekarev somebody to Yiddishkeit, or an issue which in yeshiva should and Baruch Hashem does crop up with great frequency, it's a younger bocher, you want to help him in some way. When you're involved in helping somebody with a very, very worthwhile end in view, isn't there a tendency that when we get very caught up with that, sometimes we may be inclined to cut corners in halacha or do things which we're not supposed to do in order to bring about the desired end? In other words, it's very, very important for me to help this person. But the way I think, the person can't be helped because I won't be able to communicate with him, or I won't be able to this, I won't be able to do that, unless I do something which really I shouldn't do. But by doing that, I'm going to win his confidence, and thereby I'm going to be able to persuade him, or to influence him, or to befriend him, or whatever it is that I'm setting out to do. In other words, the question of ends and means. Now, where does the fallacy over here lie? The fallacy lies in confusing my role and in kidding myself that if I don't do that job, it's not going to be done. In kidding myself that I am the only shliach of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants this end so badly that it has to be brought about. And I make a judgment that the end is so important that it's okay to bring it about even by a non-kosher means. Now, if I would realize that it's not my job to bring about the end, that's the Ribbono Shel Olam's department. My job is only to be Isaac in the Avodah which the Hashgacha has presented to me at this particular moment, so then I will know that when the point comes at which I ought not to be doing what I think I ought to be doing, at that point my obligation stops and I have to be Polish, if that's the situation. What's going to be? If I don't do it, who's going to do it? Or if I get disengaged, what's going to happen? The answer is, that's not your geschäft, that's the Rabbi Nisham's geschäft. Your geschäft is to do what's right. No?
Where does this word, Hashem, come into the picture? I mean, at certain times, do we...
Yeah, there you have no problem at all. All you have to do is to convene the Sanhedrin, Shishir, and Be'echot, right? And ask them a shaila, and where they paskin, that it applies to Eitz Lat Hashem Fe'etarosecho, you have absolutely plain sailing. Up to that point, right, it's not such a pushy thing. Now, I don't say that no end ever justifies a given means, but there are halachas about that. And there are various other things besides halachas about that. And it's a difficult judgment to make. That's why I said, are we talking about a means which ought not to be justified by the end? Yeah? The mushel you all know. You know the mushel with the Divnei Magid, with the shirt? Do you, don't you? Oh, okay, I'll tell you the mushel. Mushel is this. I don't know exactly what I know it either, but the way I remember it goes like this, that the Melech sent an ambassador to the different countries to negotiate some kind of a deal, whatever it was, and he was mazhir him that whatever he does, he says, like, whatever circumstance arises, I don't want you to take off your shirt under any circumstances at all. I don't want him to see you without your shirt on. That's not a difficult thing. He's going to negotiate a trade agreement, so he doesn't see any issue where he'll have to take his shirt off. So he sets out full of enthusiasm and joy to do his job. And everything goes smoothly. He meets his people and he has his meetings, he has his conferences. Everything's just fine. On the way back, when the officials are taking him to the airport to bring him back, take his plane back, so one of the guys talks to him and says, listen, you know, like, your trip over here has been so successful, it's really been a pleasure to have you, but I have one kashya on your king. So he says, what's that? He says, really, if you come to think of it, isn't it a bit zoyan that you should send a hunchback to negotiate for him? Couldn't he find a guy without a hunchback? So he said, what's the matter with you? I don't have a hunchback. He says, sure you have a hunchback. You see you have a hunchback. So he says, no, I don't have a hunchback. And they got themselves into an argument, yeah? And in the end, this guy got so mad, he said, I'll show you I don't have a hunchback. He took off his shirt. Oh, no, he said like this. He says, I forgot the punchline. Yeah? I said, I bet you $1 million that I don't have a hunchback. So he says, done. So he takes off his shirt, he shows him he doesn't have a hunchback. The guy says, you win, you're right, I'm sorry, I apologize. He gives him a check for $1 million, and the guy goes home happy. So he comes to the king, and he says, listen, I did your job, everything is fine. And what's more, I made a little side bet and I won $1 million for the royal treasury. So the king said, how did you do this? I told him the miser. So he said, oh, this is a shaita. Right? So I told you not to take your shirt off. He says, I had a bet with the king over there, right, for $10 million that he couldn't get my ambassador to take his shirt off, right? So you won $1 million and you lost me $10 million. That's you didn't know the story? That's the story. So what's the nimshel? The nimshel is that's the nimshel, right? Now we think, all right, I'll do this small thing. But the emphasis is that by doing the small thing, we may be losing much bigger issues. We don't know. We can't be Messiah. So we have no business to cut corners in halacha. We have no business to cut corners in what we do. What's going to happen to the end? What's going to happen is whatever the Baruch Hu wants to happen. But you've got to do what you're supposed to do. And you must refrain from doing what you're not supposed to do. Why is that such a difficult thing? It's a very easy thing. The answer is that it's a very difficult thing for a very, very important reason. And that is that when we get involved in helping people, when we get involved in trying to bring about worthwhile results. You see, if we could divorce ourselves from the issue and really do it only l'shem mitzvah, so then it's easy enough to say, look, I'm only doing l'shem mitzvah, I have no personal involvement at all. So, finished. So if over here I'm not supposed to do it, I won't do it. Finished. A very great person once said, doesn't the Torah, v'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha, should love your friend as you love yourself. This is, what does it mean? What does it mean, v'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha? It means like this. When you love yourself, why do you love yourself? Because it's a mitzvah in the Torah? You love yourself because it's a mitzvah in the Torah? No, you love yourself because you're a great guy, right? You don't need a mitzvah to tell you that you're supposed to love yourself. It says, v'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha. You should love your friend for the same reason, not because it's a mitzvah to love him. You should love your friend because you love him. In other words, you should love people. You should care for people. You should matter to you what happens to the person, not because it's a mitzvah, but because you love him. You care. So if I'm mekayem the mitzvah of v'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha, so that gets me into bad shape, because here I love this person so much and I want his good and I see so clearly what his toiv is, and it's so important and all-encompassing to me to bring about that toiv, and here comes a little bitsy avera which I'll have to do, and now you expect me to give up the whole thing in order not to be over that avera. And as far as I can see that person doomed. That's a terrible messiah. That's why I say it's such a difficult thing to live with. So if on the one hand I could say, listen, I divorce myself entirely from human feelings and I become an automaton and I only do mitzvahs, finished. So I'm never put before the issue of wanting or not wanting. That would be easy enough. But Hashem wants me to love people, to get involved with them, and to want to help them, to care about them, and to suffer if their toiv is not accomplished. So good, so you want me to be involved, so then let me do at least what I want to do. And don't stop me when I see success within my grasp just because of this or that little avera, or that little mitzvah which I won't be able to keep for a while. But the answer is no. Keep a sense of proportion. Remember that the Ribbono Shel Olam runs his world. He doesn't depend on you. You depend on you. Hashem doesn't depend on you. The results don't depend on you. If Hashem wants them, they'll be brought about anyway. It's a very, very difficult path to tread. And yet that is the path which Hashem wants us to tread. To be an absolute Eved Hashem, and at the same time to be an absolute lover of people, all kinds of people. People who agree with me, people who disagree with me, people who do things my way, people who do things differently. To love them all and to want that toiv and to be willing to sacrifice for that toiv, but not to sacrifice my ruchnias. These are very, very difficult roles to play. And the name of the game is Hachnor. The name of the game is to know in the final analysis that one is an Eved Hashem and that one's life is pre-soul. That's the Shvur. We can get ourselves to feel that way, then we can sort of get ourselves to chart that very, very rocky course